Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. This is the podcast 928B, the guest segment. Thanks for downloading us. Please tell your friends about us and rate us. We have a wonderful guest for you about a very tough disease. David Ottoberg is the Susan and Leonard Feinstein Professor of Neurology and Neuroscience and is the director of the Center for Neurosciences at the Feinstein Institute for Medical Research and has been since its founding in 2001. He's a neurologist and neuroscientist, and the Feinstein Institute is part of Northwell, which is a large hospital health system, if you will, in New York. Dr. Ottoberg, thank you very much for coming on and talking to us about Parkinson's.
Sure, it's a pleasure to be here.
Now, for those of the listeners who are listening across the country, where is Northwell located and where are you located?
Right. So Northwell Health was, until recently, known as North Shore University Hospital. Is the today that same North Shore Hospital is the primary teaching institution and the sort of center of a large, as you mentioned, clinical health system called Northwell Health. So the history is that it merged with Long Island Jewish, which is right down the road, and together they were then rebranded as Northwell Health several years ago. And we're located around 11 miles from Manhattan. So we're right over the border. We're Nassau County, a spitting distance from the border with Queens, New York.
And now your interest is strongly in Parkinson's disease, which is a, tell us all the symptoms of Parkinson's, because most people think of it as a movement disorder problem, but it's much more than that.
Right. Well, Parkinson's disease is important for all of us for different reasons. It's a public health care issue in that it's the second most common neurodegenerative disorder in the world. I mean, and just to have an idea, in North America, U.S. and Canada, there are well over a million sufferers with Parkinson's and related disorders, forms of Parkinsonism. So Parkinsonism itself is a disease primarily of the motor system. So it indeed is a movement disorder primarily, and it involves slowness, stiffness of limbs and movements, and in a good number of patients, also the characteristic tremor that people talk about. With time, it can evolve into some other more difficult, challenging symptoms like gait disturbance. And in a large number of people, there are some cognitive issues too. So they develop trouble with memory and what we call executive function. So decision making, long-term memory, and the ability to program and execute planned movements. These things are also not up to par as the disease progresses. But most of the years that people have Parkinson's disease, there's little in the way of cognitive disturbance. It's mostly motor, and it can hit people, you know, in late midlife, early elderly years. So people in their late 50s, early 60s begin to develop Parkinson's typically, and it can really inhibit their working careers at first and their general quality of living. So it's a problem from a public health standpoint. It's also a problem from a neuroscience standpoint, in that it's a loss of dopamine is the cardinal thing, that the cells that produce dopamine in the brain degenerate primarily. But where my own interest and what we've spent time working on is using brain images to suss out what are the circuit abnormalities. So how it doesn't just affect one brain region, but it creates a disorder of brain circuitry that can affect the brain totally, not just one region. So how the brain activity changes over time in the form of a circuit disorder, that's a big challenge in research, and that's what we've been doing the last sort of 15 years or so.
And your work on this, as I understand it, much like Alzheimer's, most of the treatments for this degenerative disease have been kind of like we call, I guess it would be giving Tylenol to a fever. It treats the symptoms, but it doesn't treat the basic disease. You're now getting at the basic disease, as I understand it.
Right. So with the knowledge of the circuitry and what we call in the field systems level brain functional abnormalities, systems level just means more than one brain region. It's how the brain coordinates between, you know, gets all these brain regions to kind of line up in a row and function normally. This type of functioning is not normal in Parkinson's. And by delineating this abnormal circuitry, we've been able to get more customized treatments that are directed at the circuits, not just at the symptoms. So treating the symptoms is exactly the way you said it, Dr. Roizen. It's about giving Tylenol for a fever. It masks the fever, and there are 100 different ways that one gets a fever, and it's all going to be masked to by the Tylenol, but whatever the cause was, that's still out there and creating havoc. So treating Parkinson's with replacing dopamine in the form of Sinemet. Sinemet is the treatment of brains of symptoms of the motor system, but it doesn't necessarily address itself to the actual circuit abnormality. So we're now involved in treatments that are directed at fixing the abnormal circuitry rather than just giving the Tylenol to alleviate the fever, so to speak.
Now, if I can continue on, so tell us about the you're involved. There are a raft of drugs now that are trying to get at, and in fact, as I understand, the largest dollar value of pharmaceutical research dollars now in phase 2 and 3 trials is going into Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, trying to get at the basic mechanism of disease, meaning trying to get towards cures of disease. Is that right?
Yes. I mean, it's a fascinating new area. I mean, and you asked, Feinstein Institute is located right on the campus of North Shore University Hospital at Northwell Health. And as an institute, our goals are to study diseases at their molecular core and then to try to develop treatments targeting the biochemistry or the neuroscience underlying the disease rather than just giving symptomatic treatments such as they are. And I think Big Pharma has gotten into this in parallel with this kind of general research interest. So they're trying to develop new treatments that target the abnormal, neuronal abnormalities. That means the brain cell structures that are not functioning properly in different diseases, or lately targeting the circuits themselves in different ways to try to correct circuit level abnormalities. So we're not alone in this kind of quest, but industry is still trying to ultimately bring new drugs to the market that fix the natural history, the sort of, these are drugs to modify the progression of the disease and slow it down, hopefully to to stop it altogether. And while the symptomatic treatments, for the most part, don't slow it down, they just simply mask the symptoms. So, you know, I think that's a great analogy you made to Tylenol and fever. So I think the pharmaceutical industry is keenly aware of the shortcomings of Tylenol for fever, and it's looking at more and more interesting and challenging forms of treatment. These are innovations to go directly at the circuits that are decaying or being created in the course of disease. Not all diseases involve circuit degeneration. Sometimes the adaptations to the disease are good and they are we'll try to mimic them, or that the adaptations are malignant. They're making the disease worse, so our goal is to stop those.
Let's go and talk a little bit. No, let me go and talk a little bit about circuits. So what do you mean by circuits? I know what you mean, but if we can define it in lay terms.
So the circuits are really the maps of the regions that are abnormal in the disease. So they could be many, many regions that just happen to display small or big league abnormalities at the same time. But our interests are to really get down to which groups of brain regions, because those are, it's not just the regions, but different cells throughout the whole brain. How are those malfunctioning as a unit? So the circuit becomes what we in neuroscience call an ensemble. It's a collection of areas of the brain that are functioning as one. And this discovery in disease that they're really out there and functioning in unison, that's rather new. So you're going to try to target not just one brain region at a time, but to try to alter the functioning of this collection of synchronized neurons, this ensemble. And that creates a lot of opportunities as well as challenges, because now you're not restricted to hitting one region and one region alone, but we can try to find those regions that are driving the network that are centrally located in the circuit that are driving it, and try to attack those rather than to just attack any old region that we register as being abnormal. So I don't know if that, I'm hoping that that's sort of clear, but the idea of a multi-pronged attack that's going to fix abnormalities of the whole wiring of the brain rather than just fixing an abnormality in one small brain region and hope that somehow indirectly it helps the patient overcome the disease. We're trying to get around that and maximize the chance that the patient will overcome the disease by modulating the activity of the network as a whole. So we're going to attack the network as one unit and not as a whole bunch of little units that are stitched together. So it broadens the scope of how we approach diseases, and it also personalizes it. So I can map a network for you, Dr. Roizen, or for myself, or for any of my patients through the use of brain imaging and modern software, and then I can see whether a given drug is fixing that particular network. And it may fix it in one person, but not in another, depending on his or her genes. You know, the genes ultimately determine everything. So a treatment may be ideal for one individual, but not for another. So we're trying to determine the best treatments based on the circuitry that the individual has and also the genes of that person, whether they harbor one mutation or another that predisposes to the illness. So that sort of is, it's a little abstract, but it's basically meant to try to get at the whole brain at, you know, in one stroke, and not to have to just attack one little unit of the brain here and there, one region and then another region, it kind of becomes a bit like whack-a-mole, where you fix it in one region and then the other region gets worse. This way, we're trying to fix it all at once, and we found that this approach is far more effective, in fact, at treating diseases of the brain than just hitting one region at a time.
So tell me again, when I think of Parkinson's, I think of a lack of dopamine in just one area, the substantia nigra. But that isn't what you're saying. You're saying there's a whole mapping of abnormalities. That's one of the symptom areas, but there are a whole mapping of other areas that are affected by the degenerative diseases like Parkinson's or like Lewy body or like Alzheimer's.
That's correct. I mean, the idea really is that there are networks in the brain downstream from that dopamine area. So the dopamine region becomes one of the critical ones for motor symptoms. But there are a lot of other areas that are linked up through one hop or two hops or even three hops from dopamine that are part of this network, this system of regions that are signatures of the disease.
And, so tell us a little bit about the breakthrough, too. So you've had a breakthrough, as I understand it.
There are several steps. It didn't happen initially. I just want to say that we're able, one of the initial breakthroughs that was critical to the one that I'll tell you about in a second was that we were able to use networks to diagnose people. So we could actually tell whether people had the Parkinson's and not a look-alike syndrome. So that was one of the important things about networks, is that they're very – loss of dopamine doesn't tell you that. You could measure dopamine using imaging or other techniques, but doesn't tell you whether the person has Parkinson's disease or 20% of these are just look-alike conditions that resemble Parkinson's that the clinician can't really separate. So once we're able to kind of use the networks as markers for the disease, we then figured maybe we could also determine using the networks whether people are improving, you know, whether the network activity corrected itself with treatment. So the opportunity came to look at gene therapy. And what gene therapy is basically instead of just repleting the dopamine, it's trying to correct the abnormalities of brain function that are occurring elsewhere in the circuit. So it could be that we're going to try to use the genes to fix the wiring of the brain and correct it to be more like it is in healthy people. So the abnormal circuitry will be, if not fully corrected, it will behave like the way it would be in a normal person who doesn't have Parkinson's. So we were probing these, using this brand new technology that we developed in part, we were looking to see what the circuit changes were in the brains of people who were receiving this type of gene therapy. And what the gene therapy did was it actually just changed the function of one group of neurons in the circuit. It changed it from being excitatory to inhibitory. And there was a lot of theory about it and preliminary data from animals and from human beings, but we had good reason to expect that this would help. And what we found was that it actually created its own circuitry, which was a unique breakthrough. That here the treatment ultimately was like a patch that superseded the actual changes of the disease. So the disease had also the network structure in the disease is not good. It's not benefiting the patient because it's a very inefficient way of transmitting impulses through the brain and the motor system. So if you've lost dopamine, one of the major consequences is this inefficiency of circuit function. So the neurons are just not coordinated the way they should be, and the impulses in one area are not being transmitted properly to the neighboring areas in the network. And what we found is that the gene therapy sculpted its own network that bypassed these blockages in brain transmission in the disease circuit were now replaced by their own special bypass circuitry. It's a kind of remodeling of the brain circuits in a form that allowed the patient to function a lot better. And just as a comment, people who received sham surgery, so they thought they were receiving the treatment, as did their doctors, but they didn't get the gene therapy. It was just what they call sham surgery. They just were given an opening in their skull without delivery of the gene, and that under a blind, so that no one knew who had the treatment and who didn't. And this is an important finding, that the circuits themselves and the improvement happened only in the people who got the gene, not in the ones who thought that they may have gotten the gene but had received the sham surgery. So this was really very unique to the patients who received the treatment, and it correlated extremely powerfully with the amount of improvement that was seen clinically. So the more circuitry of the new sort, this network related circuit that got this gene therapy related circuit that got formed, the more of it that you had in your brain, the better you did relative to baseline. And naturally, the people who got the placebo, they had some benefit from placebo effect, but not nearly as much as those who received the actual gene therapy. So that was the breakthrough, that the brain can form its own circuits at times to remediate the disease. You just have to turn on the trigger. The switch for that circuitry has to be turned on, and the gene therapy may provide that opportunity for the brain to activate these new circuits.
I want to thank you very much. We've been talking with Dr. Eidelberg, who is the, and let me get it right if I can, so you correct me if I'm wrong, you're the Susan and Leonard Feinstein Professor of Neurology and Neurosciences, and served as the founding and continuing director of the Center for Neurosciences at the Feinstein Institute for Medical Research at Northwell Hospital in Queens, New York. So thanks very much.
In Long Island, New York.
In Long Island, New York.
Yeah.
And so thanks very much for coming on. Thank you for listening and downloading. We're on the verge of a number of large trials in both Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and Lewy body dementia that get at the basic nature of the disease rather than just treating the symptoms. So stay tuned. We'll bring those to you week by week as they happen. This is Dr. Mike Roizen. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual podcast, podcast 928B. Please tell your friends about us. Download us every week. We have a new podcast, both of the news of the week and what it means to you, and of great guests like Dr. Eidelberg. Thanks again.